Would you discuss Buddhist rites and rituals concerning death and dying? What are the rites surrounding the death and cremation of an arhat? Just in case. I won't go into real detailed. As soon as you start talking about, say, rites and rituals, it's specific to particular, say, cultures, Buddhist culture in Thai Theravada will be slightly different from other Buddhist countries. And then even if you're in Thailand, the culture and ritual and ceremony will be somewhat different in different areas of Thailand. It will differ if you're in the countryside or in the city. So there's a lot of a range. So to say Buddhist rites and rituals as if it were one coherent thing is not really so. But cremation is the predominant way of dealing with dying. Around the time of death or approaching death, then of course there's a lot of emphasis on helping the person to recollect what is wholesome, what is a refuge, so that there'll usually be relatives or friends or they invite monks to come and do chanting and give teachings at the bedside while somebody is dying. But a lot of it is in ways of establishing mindfulness, allaying fear and confusion, and encouraging wholesome mental state, so that the passing is one of is peaceful and clear, and that's the main function. And then after death, then generally, say, like, I spent the vast majority of my time in living in Thailand in a forest monastery that actually was a cremation ground, a charnel ground. That's what it was. And then they invited the monks to come and live there, so that it continued to be a place where the villagers would bring their dead. And in the countryside, then, things are pretty straightforward. You usually know when somebody's died in the village. When in the morning time, there's a bunch of the men will show up and start collecting firewood, and getting ready for a cremation. They wouldn't keep the body. It'd be within 20. If somebody died at night, next afternoon is when you would do the cremation. Now with an increased dispersion of relatives and friends, more mobile society, then oftentimes the cremation won't take place for 3 days, 7 days. It's, you know, as soon as they can get the relatives together. And so there's a whole, kind of cottage industry in refrigerated coffins. So, I mean, because one of the reasons you just go ahead and do the cremation within 24 hours is in a tropical country, you don't want to be keeping it very long. It gets ripe real quick. But it's also very, everybody comes. My experience is one of being in a village, and death is out in the open. Everybody grows up seeing people dying. Houses are very open. People live close together. You know when somebody's ill. Everybody goes to visit. They know when somebody dies. Everybody helps out. Everybody comes, brings the body out. Everybody's there. They pour water onto the. It's like a blessing, with just a little sprinkle of water each person, and you're giving your good wishes to that person, and then everybody from the kids, older people, relatives. So everybody's involved. Everybody sees what's happening. Nothing's hidden. It's very quite healthy. And then after the cremation, then there's the ashes will be gathered, and the remains of bones and ashes will be kept after 3 days, and one continues to do ceremonies after that, and you keep a portion of those the ashes and bones to do ceremonies in the future, after 7 days, 50 days, 100 days, a year. So you continue to dedicate blessings to somebody who's passed away. And then for somebody who's considered an arahant, then it's a lot more complicated. There's usually, say with Ajahn Chah, then the cremation took place a year after he passed away, so we kept the body for a year, and that's interesting also. There wasn't any didn't have refrigerated coffins in those days, so we had a coffin that was what they use. It's traditional method, and you use had a bed of tobacco about that thick on the bottom, and then you packed tobacco and then tea, just ordinary green tea, around the body. So the coffin was filled up after. So what that did was any fluids, body fluids, then are drawn, and it takes the smell away, so that when we changed the coffin just a few days before the cremation, and we did it really because there was ceremonies going during the the cremation ceremony of Ajahn Chah was 10 days of meditation, chanting, practice as a expression of gratitude, there were there's about 5 or 6 thousand monks there in the monastery, about 500 or 1,000 nuns, about 10,000 lay women, 500 to 1,000 lay men, and everybody living in the monastery, practicing together. And then there's huge numbers of people coming, paying respects all through the day and the night. And but we waited until, I don't know, about 1 o'clock. It was as few people as possible to change the coffin out, because we realized that the coffin that we had used to keep him in was very good hardwood, and we were afraid that it wouldn't give good ventilation. It was solid bottom, so we changed it out so that it would be get ventilation through it for the fire. And then we, when we opened the coffin up and then started taking away all the stuff, there didn't seem to have been any change in Ajahn Chah's. It's just very beautiful complexion, there wasn't any deterioration of the body, and then so I don't know if that was tobacco or not. I don't know if that worked for everybody. And then the somebody considered an accomplished being, then after the cremation, then the relics or the ashes and the bits of a bone that come in the fire, those are actually incredibly sought after, because they turn into, oftentimes they'll turn into kind of crystal relics, and there had been a couple just before Ajahn Chah's cremation of highly regarded teachers who'd passed away, and there had been cremation. There had been real unseemly sort of scenes at the actual cremation, people trying to get at the ashes, and so we actually designed some people may have seen been to Wat Bapong, but also seen the pictures of this large chedi, a very beautiful, elegant chedi. Well, that was built specifically for the cremation. It took us 6 months to build it, which was a real feat in itself. And then the cremation took place inside, and the chedi was built in a way, so that was the chimney. And then the funeral, the oven, we put in the coffin to burn. We built it in a way that we could close the door and lock it, and nobody could get at it. And then when we collected the ashes, and then it was done in a way that we could do it in a very orderly and respectful way. And actually, none of them were distributed to anybody. It's all at Wapapong. So there's all sorts of different ways.
You see that throughout?
Yeah. And there's some that are on display. They're a little bit hard to see, but we built a chedi so that the middle part was crystal, so that you could see that, and they're very different. Ajahn Chah always did things differently. They're very different. Is that oftentimes how they'll appear is these like crystal, quite small crystal, or reasonably kind of dense, tight sort of crystal formations. And Ajahn Chah's are almost like coral, and many of them are quite large, this kind of size, rather than small. And there's a few different colors, and then it has this kind of coral-like, coral and airy sort of like, almost cellular. I've never seen anything like it before. So we have some of those. Then all the rest are down below in concrete slab over it. The chedi is on top of it, and then a granite plinth over top. And they also put in quite a few amulets that people had offered Ajahn Chah or made for Ajahn Chah for him to bless, to be able to distribute. And Ajahn Chah never did that. He kept them. those are in that plinth underneath the chedi.